Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Boogie. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
Oh, wow. Hey, everybody. Today is my first day just trying to broadcast the show using Skype with my guest dialing in through Skype. With me on a cell phone on another line, just in case. So today is just a good day. It's just an interesting day. So that's what it is. Well, just let me start by saying welcome to Life Remix Radio. It's your girl Cy Brown, broadcasting live from Times Square in New York City, where we just kind of talk about inspiration, motivation, current topics, hot topics, today's hottest topics from a faith-based perspective, and all of that other good stuff. We have an amazing guest today. His name is, okay, I want to get this right because I said, let me ask, just so I get your name right, it's Oronde Ash. And so he's going to be joining us in a couple of minutes. We're going to chime him in, and hopefully we can get this whole Skype thing together. This is just my week for technology, everybody, because we weren't actually supposed to go to a live show. I'm sorry, not a live show. A one-hour show until August 4th, which is Monday, but I got a little daring and decided to go live earlier, so this is kind of just our test to make sure when we go live with a full one-hour show on August 4th, where it broadcasts on the net as well as streams on the net, we are definitely on point. As always, I just want to get started with our daily thought from the hill, just our kind of our little daily scripture just to get us going on the right path. It comes from this book. I'm holding it up so everybody seeing it. It's on YouTube can see it. The Daily Thoughts from the Hill, and that's from Hillside Chapel and Truth Center in Atlanta, Georgia. So today is today Thursday, July 31st? Oh, my God. This, you know what? I say that every single day. The time just goes so quickly. I don't know the time. But anyway, today's scripture is, I love the body I am in. My body houses my spirit. My body enables me to do the work of God, and I love the body I'm in, knowing that it is well suited for me. I accept my body just the way it is, even though I may want to be leaner, slimmer, or taller. I show gratitude for my body just the way it is. I give thanks for each body part and its function. I give thanks for all of its abilities. Excuse me, I give thanks for the activities my body has achieved. I recognize that my body is a vehicle and it is not me. I love the body I'm in and I do my very best to give it proper care. I thank my body for the perfect work it does. God made my body perfect. I love my body and recognize that it is a perfect vehicle for my spirit. I take care of my body by giving it proper nutrition, proper rest, and proper exercise. I love the body I am in. Thanks, God, in me, as me, and so it is. And the scripture reading is, Do you not know you are a temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? And that's 1 Corinthians 3:16. And I actually share that exact scripture when I'm talking to my young girls. Many of you know that I am a speaker, and I kind of go out and give talks to people, mostly young people, you know, just kind of encouragement. They bring me in to talk to the, most of the time, they're young people about life, pop culture, and all those good things. But when I talk to women and young girls, that's definitely the scripture that I use for their encouragement. So I want to, you know, just talk on one thing very quickly. Yesterday we talked how the House formally apologized for slavery and Jim Crow, but they did stop short of mentioning reparations. So, I don't know. Send me an email, hit me up in the chat room, and let me know, do you feel that black people are owed reparations? I really want to talk about that. I find that very, very interesting. And I did mention, and I want to talk about it next week, how McDonald's, actually we're scheduled to talk about this for tomorrow's show. McDonald's is sponsoring the Gay Pride Parade, And a lot of Christians are up in arms that they should not be sponsoring the gay pride parade. And my comment to that is, well, if they sponsor the gay pride parade, no, I mean, if they sponsor the Gospel Superfest, why can they not, in fact, sponsor the gay pride parade? So, you know, six in one hand, half a dozen in another. So that's going to be fodder for our conversation tomorrow. So without further ado, I definitely want to bring Mr. Ash into the conversation. My brother, are you there with us? Okay, I don't think he's with me through Skype. Hey, it's Saeed. Are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. I can barely hear you, but I can hear you. Hold on 1 second. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. Okay, I we weren't able to chime you in through Skype, were we?
No, I think I'm getting you just as someone who was in the chat room sort of thing. But as long as
yeah,
you can hear me, it's all good.
I can hear you. Just kind of have to speak up a little bit because...
No problem.
Okay, good. So then that's what it is. First of all, I think the conversations that we have had are absolutely amazing, just about you immigrating to the United States and just all of the things that, you know, we've talked about behind the scenes. And just if you could share with my guests a little bit about your background, and then I'll jump right into my questions.
Okay, no problem. Again, my name is Oronde Ash. I was born on an island called St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and for many years I had no reference in terms of explaining where that was to a lot of people in this country. But if you've ever seen the movie Pirates of the Caribbean 1 or 2, that was St. Vincent and the Grenadines, all in the background. It was actually filmed in the town that I was born in, a town called Bowerly. All that stuff where Johnny Depp is stealing the boat and he's getting on the boat, all that was a harbor right in my town. And I came here, actually, to the U.S. with my mom and my two younger sisters when I was 9 years old in 1985. I moved to New Jersey, and it was this eye-opening experience about the dream of America that you were sold when you're outside this country versus the reality once you get here, and just figuring out how to deal with that.
I think, you know, it's very profound that you talk about the dream that you were sold before you got here versus the reality. Is it really a dream that you're sold?
I love this country. I've been in this country for 24 years now. It's the greatest country in the world. But when you're younger, and especially growing up in a poor country that I grew up in, not that my family was all right, but a lot of people around us were poor. You almost get a sense of America as being this promised land. You know, anything I wanted that really meant something to me, that, you know, books or clothes, all of that stuff came from my family who was in the United States. So when I got here, I assumed that I would sort of have, as you don't, and there's a lot of worrying, a lot of fighting it. And it was also being a 9-year-old kid trying to fit in and a different accent and all that kind of stuff, but It's a dream. It's there. I think I'm trying to live it now. But when you first get here, it's jarring. It's very jarring.
I just want to say you're coming in a little vague. Like it's a little broken. So I don't know if you want to maybe try to dial in from a different phone, the same number that you dialed, or I can send it to you because you're just sounding a little broken up. Can you hear us well?
I'm going to stop and then try to come back through Block Talk Radio, because that was a whole lot easier.
Okay, can you try to do that?
Oh.
Is it possible for you to dial back in?
Yes, I'm going to try that. Just give me about a minute or so to try to do that.
Okay, while you're doing that, I'm just going to give my listeners a quick update because I was able to hear you, but I don't know if you were. One of the things that Oronde was saying that, you know, just coming from Grenada, he talks about the dream that he was sold versus the realities that exist in America. And I have a friend that told me that he was always told that America is the land of opportunity, and if America is the land of opportunity, why did he come here and everybody was looking for a job? So I just found it interesting that here we are in America, blacks in America, how we're quick to grumble and rumble about, you know, America, it's racist, it's this and it's that. And I think that we can't deny that fact, but I also think it's very important that we understand people that are not here, they have a different perception of what America really is and what it stands for versus the people that are actually in the trenches every single day. So I just think it's, you know, I think it's interesting. You know, we look at it as, you know, the schools suck, this sucks, that sucks. But here he is, somebody that's coming from a different country, and he has this grand vision. And then when he gets here, it's like, wait, the nickel wasn't so shiny when I got here. Would you agree with me, Aronde?
Yes, and I first have to say, can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you.
And I, no disrespect to all the my Grenadian posse out there, but I'm Vincentian, born in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. So we got to get my... I've had a chance to talk about my story a little bit, and I don't want to get people to get hung up on the immigrant aspect. I think my first 2 years in this country, just as a nine-year-old boy, they were troubling. I remember in the fourth grade, literally going to my aunt's bathroom mirror and pinching my nose because I wanted my nose to be straight like the white kids in my class, or not thinking I'm beautiful or handsome. There was an incident that happened in February, my first February here. It was I'd never experienced Valentine's Day. So all of a sudden, you know, I go to class and then there are cards from all these girls, and I'm thinking they like me. They really, really like me, but, you know, it's not the case. It's just Valentine's Day. And so I thought I was an ugly human being. All of a sudden, these people liked me, but it was something else. It was a different reality, a different context. So it's about those sort of situations, and you grow out of that as you grow up.
Now, you mentioned, I think I understood when you said you have two sisters. Is that correct?
Correct. Two younger sisters, Annie and Terry. Annie's a year younger than me, and my sister Terry, she was born in 83. I think she's about 23, 24 now. They still live in Brooklyn.
But do you think their experiences with America, because I definitely want to move into black in America, but do you think their experiences were different based upon the fact that they're female?
Yes, I do. And what's funny is there was a moment in high school where just growing up, you realize that, one, get out of your own head. That the things that you're experiencing, I realized that my sister was living in the same room with me all my life in this country, so she was experiencing the same thing. Actually, posted a video on YouTube talking about her life. I had never engaged in a conversation with her, and I had her look at the video, and she said she cried because it was the first time she heard somebody say what she was already feeling.
Wow. But do you... I'm sorry, please continue.
No, but it's when you're steeped in this idea of being down and being out, and, you know, life is horrible and life is bad, all you see is your misery. And for many years, this is a young black man growing up in Brooklyn, I saw misery, I saw the dread, I saw the hopelessness. I didn't live it because, thankfully, I had people around me, teachers, and I valued education, so I always, when I went to school, I always felt about what I did. But I can see the reality as it exists for so many people who are caught in that life. And all I saw for many, many years until I was 16, 17 years old, even though I have four younger brothers and sisters, all I saw was my dread. And at some point I said, oh, my God, I am the oldest in my family. They're all experiencing this, and it's my job to help them get through. And that's what I want to do now with the rest of my life, help them, help anybody else get through a similar circumstance.
Well, you know, I think that's pretty lofty, and I don't say that to be mean or to be taken, you know, in a bad way. But I think, don't you think some of the ills that plague our young people, especially our young black males, are too deep-rooted for one person to fix? Did I lose you? Aronde, are you there? I think I lost him. Well, what I was saying is that I was asking him, you know, he has these really, really lofty goals and lofty things that he wants to accomplish, you know, just to help people. He's an author, he's an educator, and he definitely wants to impart his love of learning and a profound faith in education. and stressed how like a commitment to personal excellence can really be ushered into our young people. And I'm saying, well, you know, I think that's what a lot of us want to do. I know I do. I know I definitely do. It's something that I would love to do. But sometimes I get very, I don't want to say distressed, but, you know, you look at it from a point where aren't these problems a little bit bigger than Psy? Aren't these problems a little too deep-rooted in our community? And it's really not to be cynical. That's the same thing that Oprah went through when she opened that school in Africa. Everybody was saying, oh, you know, why couldn't she help the people in Chicago? And she was saying, that, hell, I tried to help. You know, I asked them or whatever, and all they wanted was an iPod. And you know what? To a certain degree, she's right. But I had a conversation with my dad about that. And he was saying how it's frustrating for him as a man and as a person and as somebody who lived through Jim Crow that how dare Oprah or anybody have the audacity to question these kids about them wanting an iPod when that's all they probably know. You're going to the bowels of the hood and you're saying, okay, do you want a book or do you want an iPod? You know, so he's saying that it's a slightly unfair question, and you're asking it to an audience that definitely wants an iPod. So, you know, I guess I was saying to Orande that is it kind of lofty, the things that you want to accomplish, or is it practical?
It is. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
I think it's highly possible. It is highly possible. We're not looking to transform, I don't know how many people we are, we're 30 million deep in this country, I believe. I'm not looking to transform every single life, but one or two can be changed for the better. And if somebody hears you, somebody out there is listening to you talk right now, and their life might be changed. They might decide, I want to do a radio program like you're doing. I want to speak like you are. I want to have the Spirit of God in me like you are. You're not setting out with a goal of transforming every single human being, but you're just doing your thing, and so hopefully somebody catches on.
You know, it's funny. I know this police officer, and he said to me years ago when I told him, you know, I want to do all these things with my life, I want to help people, and he said to me, Saida, there were a lot of problems here before you got here in 1971, and there are going to be a whole lot of problems here the day you depart from this earth. Why bother? And you know what, for a long time, felt like that. I'm like, why do I bother? These people don't want to learn. These, you know, whatever I was feeling at that moment. But then I thought about it. I'm like, I can't fathom living any other way. And I look at my son, who's 18 years old, and it's frustrating as hell. You know, I'm telling him, okay, you got to do this. You got to do this. You got, and he's just so lethargic and, you know, chill. And I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, I wish he would have some fire, but you know, and I'm ready to give up, and I'm sure there are a lot of talents that are ready to give up, but I just can't. It's just something inside. You can't. Is that how you feel?
That's the way I felt. I wanted to write a book about my life since I was 17 years old. My first novel, I'm trying to get it out now, is called 17 to Life, because I looked at my life in middle school or high school, and I saw amazing young people full of promise. I'm ready to take on life. I looked at the working world, and I saw dead people. I saw dead people who were slaving from 9 to 5, who had given up on all their adolescent ambitions, all that energy. There's an energy in Black history. There's an energy for continually making progress. And I imagine some 9, 10, 11-year-old boy from Mississippi or Alabama waking up every day and realizing King is doing something, X saying something, Abernathy is doing something. We're continually progressing. And what has happened, I think, in the last 40 years, and this is one of the things that CNN special sort of touched on, is you don't see that activity anymore. It's like, all right, Lyndon Johnson gave y'all civil rights. You can vote. You got affirmative action. You know, your son is, I don't know too much about him, but he's probably living comfortably. What he got to fight for? What has he got to fight for? And I say there is a lot to fight for between the day you're born and the day you die. For the average Black man, he got 70 years in this earth. And you got to deal with racism and hypertension and family and money. But you got to do it because we always have in this country. Always have. Why stop doing stuff now? Why would we ever doing something today when it's needed more than ever because there's this level of apathy, exactly like you said. We have it. It's there, but we need to do more. So my job is to inspire people to do more. I'm not trying to be king. I'm not trying to be X. I'm trying to be the best around the ash that I can be because I have lived. And the things that I've seen, people here.
You know, I want to change lanes briefly and talk about the CNN special, Black in America. You got a chance to view it, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I missed Thursday's part with women, and my friends told me who saw it that it was horrible, but, you know, that's just their opinion. I can't speak on it because I didn't see it. But what I did see was Friday's episode that had women, I mean men and fathers, and I want to touch about that. And I'm fair. You know, I would not go so far as to consider myself really a journalist, but, you know, a media personality with an opinion maybe is a better fit. But I thought it was pretty fair. I thought it was a pretty accurate assessment, but there's a lot of people that said it was very biased, it was very one-sided. What did you think of it?
Well, in life, I mean, you got. I think they had 4 hours to disseminate the history of 30 million people. That's not going to happen. So people just need to realize that, you know, TV is there for entertainment, it's there for a little relation, it's there to give you just a little bit of insight, but then it's your job. I've heard there are families now who are taking it upon themselves that, you know, big families in Black America are going out and saying, we're addressing, you know, Cousin Mario is going to address this one problem that CNN talked about. He's going to go in this community and do something. It's a window. It's a window. It gives you a vantage to say, this is what's going on. Now what am I going to do about it? Now, in terms of what I thought, and especially on that second episode, I don't like the fact that a lot of it, especially the beginning, was dealing with this one dude who had to go to prison to find salvation. I mean, he was the drugs, he was a drug addict, and he was saved by religion. I've seen and heard that story countless times. When I was growing up, that was the story. It seemed like a brother had to go to jail just to find time to read, just to find clarity. I mean, you look at the movie Hancock. I love the movie. Will Smith is brilliant.
Well, let me interrupt you. Ms. V on the scene, who definitely listens to the show frequently, she said, it was disgusting, that CNN Black in America segment. There were no answers. And I have to agree. And then I also agree with you. You said that you've heard that story about two people that start out the same, one goes one way. I do believe it was a bit cliche-ish. I agree with that time and time again. But what were we really looking for? First of all, look at the source. And just for the record, I did ask Soledad O'Brien to come on the show, and after they found out about the show, I was told that she's out of the country, no, that she's on vacation, and then she's going out of the country. So for the record, I did ask, and my request was declined. But the point is, what were we really looking for? Can you help me out? What were we really looking for? I'm not sure. And before as you're dialing back in, we saw a young Black man who wasn't taking care of his kids. I can name 10 people right now, 10 Black men right now I know that are not taking care of their kids. But conversely, I can name 10 Black men who are taking care of their kids. I can probably name 10 people who went to college and did the right thing. I can name way more than 10 people who screwed up and came from good homes and did not do the right thing. So, I mean, my real question is, what exactly were we looking for CNN to do with this piece? Can you weigh in on that?
Well, I mean, and I think you had the discussion. You had a lady on, I believe, on Monday who was a filmmaker. And film, it's a money-making scheme. It's not a social device. They weren't putting that for people to feel good. It's a money-making scheme. They know there's a Black guy running for president, and there's this renewed interest in race and Blackness in America. So you put it on in July where kids are home. It's there to make money. It's as simple as that. It's entertainment. Now, the rest, like I said, it's a window. It's for us to look at it and have these discussions. Is it accurate? Which it wasn't. Some parts of it, yes. There are 30 million Black stories in this country. And we should be paying attention to the other 29 million 900 and whatever it was. the ones right next to us in our community.
You know something, Ms. V on the scene just said, first of all, months ago, CNN sent out feelers to black folks to be spotlighted on the segment, and the success of Black America was what they were supposed to be highlighting. They never did that. And she put that in capital letters as well as ended it with an exclamation point. So I say back again, I did reach out to Soledad O'Brien to have Soledad O'Brien come on the show and kind of help us understand what was the purpose of Black in America. I wanted to know what the purpose was. But then again, I have to say, I don't think it was that unfair. It highlighted the realities that we see. It did not highlight all of the realities, but why are people so up in arms?
I mean, I think there also needs to be another angle. I wonder about the story about the stable two-parent family, they do exist, or the mom who's working, or the dad who's working, taking care of his daughter. You know, there are other stories, and Soledad shows this. And the people looking at it with a critical eye know this. And the real question should be, why isn't BET showing other 29 million stories? Why isn't TV1? Why isn't whoever's out there?
BET is not going to...
Their Shark Week directed at us by people. We got to do it.
I need you to call in. I'm sorry, from another connection. We can barely hear you. I don't know what's going on. It just sounds very muffled. Can somebody hit me up in the chat room and just let me know, on a scale of 1 to 10, the clarity, if you can hear my guest, if you can hear Aronde Ash. Aronde, you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, can you call from your cell phone? Or are you calling from your cell phone now?
No, I'm not. What number can I call from?
Oh, okay. You know what? I think I may know what it is. Can you hear me now better?
Yes, I can.
Oh, maybe it was me. I had you on speaker on my cell phone. I think I said earlier I left my headset in my car and I haven't gone down to get it. Anyway, Ms. V on the scene said there's a 6 to 7 with clarity. And then, of course, we have, you know, sirens. So, it's okay. Tom Ficklin from Ficklin Media Group said, oh, everything is fine now. Oh, so it was me. Okay, thanks, everybody.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You can hear me now?
Much better now. It was me because I had you on speaker, but it's because I'm calling for my BlackBerry, and it gets hot on your ear if you use it for more than an hour. Oh, wow. You know what, everybody? Y'all have to love me, and I have to love you back. This show is just getting better and better, and I'm learning what works and what doesn't work. Okay, now let's go back to ranting on CNN. Oh, everybody's laughing. Ms. V says, yeah, I heard the sirens, too. I was ready to start running. See, that's black people. See, that's intrinsic to who we are as people. We hear sirens. We don't stop. We don't look around and say, okay, what's going on? We just book. So I think that's pretty funny that you said that. But anyway, back to CNN. What were we looking for? What really were we looking for them to accomplish? Can you clue me in on that?
I think it's also what I talked about the last 4 years. I don't know how the connection was, but and up until 1965 was affirmative action stars, the Great Society, Voting Rights Act, all that stuff. We were making the steps. We were there in the halls of Congress pushing for change, and now sort of we're living that change. And I think people feel that it's not their responsibility to act. Well, my thing is, it's your responsibility to act every single day in the 70 years that you've given on this earth. So it is a window. Don't expect television to give you answers. Television is to make money. Movies are there to make money. They are windows. The real television, the real learning, the real action comes from real people who go out in the community and pose these questions to your friends, to your neighbors, to your colleagues, and you, individual human beings, get things done. The Poor People's March, millions of people in D.C., 1963, they went back to their communities and they did stuff. Don't wait for politicians. Don't wait for council people. Don't wait for ambassadors. Human beings make a difference on this earth. We've always done that in this country, and black folks need to recognize the power in our history and go out and make the changes we've always done. So don't wait for CNN. Soledad O'Brien, that's her job. Her job is to stand there and just say one or two things. That's it. Get over it. We've got to go out and do the rest.
Well, Ms. V says you're on point about TV. You're very on point about that. Okay. Look at it from this perspective. Y'all all know, you know, my mother would have a fit if she heard me say y'all, but I'm saying y'all anyway. That's me living in Atlanta for a couple of years. Y'all all know that we have issues within our own community. Whatever their issues are, I was told my whole life I talk like a white girl. I got teased because I was smart and I liked to study. And I made my way in the hip-hop industry, but I personally think hip-hop has so totally destroyed the black community that its effects have not scratched the surface about how it's going to affect subsequent generations. So what impact, if any, do you think hip-hop has had on our people?
Now, I think hip-hop is a mirror, but it's also a two-way mirror. I understand that you got out of the game and you're trying to do something else on a more positive light. The hip-hop that I listened to, and I got into hip-hop about 10 years ago, I didn't listen to a lot of it when I was younger because I believed the hype and I didn't see the real substance that was underneath it. I listened to guys like Mos Def, Tyler, Common, people who have profound things to say about my journey through life. Even somebody like Jay-Z. 10 years ago, I hated Jay-Z. I hated talking about the evils of Marcy Projects and hustling. But the Jay-Z that I see now is a man. He's a man talking about his power and his influence. You Google Jay-Z now. You know, you see a guy in a tuxedo coming out of a Bentley. He's looking sharp. He's hip-hop, like you, like the message that you try. Hip-hop is growing up. And we need to pay attention to the people who are really transforming the industry and helping us. I don't know how old you are. He said 1971, so about 37, 38. You're moving on. I think somebody like a Jay-Z or a Mos Def or a Talib is moving on with us. So pay attention to those people. Turn off the radio. The radio is crass entertainment just to titillate people. Turn off the radio and listen. Go out and get the stuff that you want to hear.
All right. Well, here's the thing. Two things based on what you said. You're saying people to go out and hear what you want to hear. We don't even know what we want to hear because the radio shoves what they think we want to hear on the radio, so we don't even know what's out there. That's number one. And number two, yes, Jay-Z has grown up, but what about all the years Jay-Z had not grown up and we were listening to Can't Knock the Hustle and all of that other stuff? And I don't even want to make this about Jay-Z, but let's look at it from a broader perspective. Yes, Puffy's growing up. He's now a father. Jay-Z is growing up. Yeah, all of these people are growing up, but look at the damage they caused when they were not growing up. And those are the effects that we're feeling right now. I mean, I look at my teenagers who literally grew up in this industry, grew up, you know, really experiencing hip-hop to the fullest. And they have issues, but look at all the children whose parents are still clubbing and still partying and still wearing Apple bottoms and stuff like that. I mean, at what point do we change, or what point do we raise our expectations?
Well, I think it's today. It's yesterday. It's parenting. I have a five-year-old son. He's about to start kindergarten in a month, and I went to his kindergarten about a month ago. And the first thing, my first reaction in looking around was to try to see how many other black kids were in the class. And I was worried because he's an intelligent kid. He's been in an all-black preschool, and they've been teaching him a lot of things that most five-year-olds are not learning. He's reading. He's doing some amazing things. And my worry is that he's going to get in an environment where the expectation is going to be lower. The expectation is going to be lower for him, so he's going to start underperforming. And then, you know, another parent looked me in the eye and said, man, you got to do that at home. Forget about hip-hop. It's at home. Let's fix the home. Let's fix the home. It might not be mom and dad. It might be just my dad, but cultivate a relationship. The whole message is about cultivating a strong relationship, first with yourself. Honor and value yourself, and then build those relationships from there. That's how communities start. And communities lead to organizations, and that leads to action, those things. So start small.
We have a caller, but before we get to the caller, I want to say one thing. I had a very big problem when I went to put my son, Daquan, who's going to be 19 next week, in school because we spent a lot of time and a lot of money putting him through early education programs, and my sister in-law did not. She just, you know, no fault to her. She just did not emphasize early childhood education with her children. And I said, I'll be doggone if I put my son and my nephew in the same class after all the money and time we spent, because now what's going to happen is my son is going to be made to feel, well, you don't need as much help right now, and he'll be left by the wayside. So let me bring in guest calling from 212-858. Guest, are you there?
Yes, this is Miss B. I'm the same, beloved. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, my darling. How are you?
Wonderfully well. I appreciate this these segments you're having this afternoon.
Oh, good. Yay. Do you have a comment or a question?
Well, I don't know. I maybe one of both, if that's okay.
Absolutely. We have 24 minutes left in the show. Let's make it happen.
I promise to be very, very brief. I usually am. I think my concern is that when we look at some of what the media is putting out there, we can all agree that it is nothing more than just that media. And there's
right.
a lot of hype, and there's not necessarily anything tangible in media that says that I'm supporting you as a people. But when I see that I had written you in the chat room that I knew some months back from some other government officials that CNN was looking supposedly for black folks to highlight and blah, blah, blah to create this segment, which they presented to us last week, which was a total farce. Now,
yeah, it was.
Yes, exactly. So for me personally, you lied to me blatantly, and you lied to my friends, you know, having us seek out people who you could use to focus on in regards to the what it's called the new millennium, the blacks
right.
of the new millennium. Anyway, so you didn't do that, so I was definitely perturbed. I only caught a few minutes of one of the two-day segments. I wasn't interested in anything more because I knew you were lying. It wasn't
right.
a matter of CNN telling a story, but they were telling a half-truth. My focus is always this. Now, I am the mother of five adult children, and I have one grandson who's 5 years old. So I've been around the block a couple of times. I know a little something. My point is this. How on earth is it that you, in a journalistic persuasion or media hype or whatever, you didn't even think or care enough, Soledad or anyone else, who is not of the same culture as me, to try to put on a story and portray us as if this is all that we are, when in fact there are many of us who have been in the trenches for 20 years or more, and there are things that are going on that you didn't even highlight, like even though our high school dropout rate may be very high, but what is the cause of that? What we are experiencing, people, is the fruit we're seeing is from something that started many, many years ago. You cannot keep badgering a people, and I'm not putting the blame or the onus completely on America or anything like that, but the black family has been so divided over the years. You know, fathers were taken out of homes since the late 60s, early 70s. A combination of all other sorts of things. And there's nothing been input in them to say, you know what, I'm sorry for what has transpired. I know that me as a nation, as a government, has had some input into your demise, but I'm just going to excuse it now and say, look at you. You are what I said you were. Because you have to remember something. Black people have been pointed, have had the finger pointed at them since the beginning of time. And that's just the way that goes. And then we have some of us in our own culture who sit to the side and say what we're not doing. Well, you know what? It's not unique to us. These problems, issues, and concerns are not unique to black people. But the reason we are focused on is because if you focus on someone else, you get to get the focus off of you. And
right.
that's what the issue is here. So, you know, many of us are doing what needs to be done. And it's not a matter of just saying, you know, you need to do better. There are some inert, emotional, psychological problems going on in our own culture. And that's what people like myself and many other people are addressing.
Well, you know something. I think it's interesting how we all know that there's issues going on with us, and we all can admit, listen, we all have some flaws, and we all have some cousins that we don't let around, you know, our coworkers. At what point do we take personal responsibility for who we are? And I say that based on this premise. I got pregnant at 17 years old, and I think what saved me, matter of fact, I know what saved me is because my parents poured so much into me as a young child that I was able to recover really, really well, considering I was very ill prepared to be a mother at 18 years old, and I can so admit that. But the point is, at what point do we as a people look around and say, you know what, the difference starts with me. I want to do better. Or is it that we just don't know how to do better?
Well, I'm confident that we are and we do. I mean, once again, we're not looking at the whole picture. People are admitting. As an example, I don't go for the blame game. However, I do hold everybody accountable, and I say that everyone is guilty. That's the point or the premise that I come from. So we are taking ourselves seriously, looking in the face and saying, you know, I am guilty of something.
Oh, Rhonda, you have something to say?
Now, in terms of the attack on the black family, and I mean, you made the point that that's been going on since the 70s.
I can't hear. Okay. Anyway, are you there, Ms. V?
I'm right here.
You know what I heard now? I don't know if this is true or not, because y'all know I read stuff and can't remember where I saw it. But anyway, yeah, I can't hear him either. But anyway, I heard that Martin Luther King, and I don't know if this is true, but I heard that he was the one that helped orchestrate and was applauded for introducing like a welfare-type system to our people, but it was done under the guise of helping our people, but he knew ultimately it was going to hurt our people. Do you know if there's any truth to that, or am I just talking through my neck?
I'm afraid you are, because welfare was actually started after World War II. Wasn't the same name. And the reason it was generated was for white wives of military personnel who did not have income coming in from their spouses. That's
okay.
When it was actually generated. But it was called something else. Then later on in the 60s at whatever point, then this whole, as we know, welfare system began. And it was mandated that any males in the household had to be removed. And at that time, when blacks were allowed to get on this public assistance for one reason or another, they began to also understand that they couldn't have a family nucleus anymore. And men were forced out of the home or sneaking and that whole thing. And that's the reality of that. And then it generated into more and more and more different types of issues. Then the 80s came, Bill Clinton decided he wanted to do welfare reform. Fine, but you know something, Mr. Clinton? You forgot that you've already, you know, diluted a whole generation of family members, fathers and mothers and children. You dig what I'm saying? So that's why I say everyone is responsible for this. Fortunately, we are in a new place in our era where we have the opportunity not only to do more, but to be more and to be more visible at it. But by the same token, we cannot walk away from our brothers and sisters who don't have the impetus or the energy to do what we know we should be doing.
But then if in fact that's the case, so then doesn't a big part of what we're feeling now lie with those people that opted to choose welfare as opposed to keeping their family together?
Well, that's easy for us to say, but do you know what the situation was? If you've never but that's what I'm saying. How you may live or how I may live does not mean the entire world is living that way. Good, bad, right? You see what I'm saying? So that's the reality for a lot of people. And the key here is, even if we don't acknowledge it, when we say things or think like that, we may be in judgment of another person. And I tell you, with five children whose father passed away not long after my youngest died, I would have done anything I needed to do to feed my babies. And that's what's up.
Well, you know something? It's funny because when I started college, right? I was on my way to Boston University, and I wanted to attend Cornell, but I couldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
And when I ended up having to attend a community college because I was local, I had a newborn baby, this, that, whatever. It wasn't until I got into school that I learned about Pell Grants, TAP Grants, this, you know, child care vouchers, and I didn't learn any of that stuff. I didn't know what it was. So I went and I took the necessary steps to save myself money from paying my tuition. Is it right? Is it wrong? Nah, I'm not going to put myself in the hot seat. But there are people out there that want to do the right thing, that are willing to take personal responsibilities. So do some of these social programs make it easier?
Well, I mean, that's just it. It's a matter of mindset. I am not going to turn away from anything that is a resource to me. The bottom line is, do I hold it as a crutch? But you have to remember there's all types of strengths and weaknesses in every human being. That's why, you know, I go by, my platform is the human connection. And one of the reasons, the basis behind the human connection is we are our brother's keeper. Everybody don't have the strength that you and I may have, baby. And there's some things that I'm weak at that I need other people around me, community, family, to build me up on. And that's
right.
Our job and responsibility. Not, well, why didn't they do? I could care less why you didn't do. If I see that you have the sincere desire to do, I'm there for you. And these are the people that I work with. The scripture even says, you know, the Messiah said out of his mouth, the poor you have with you always. So it's always going to be someone who's going to you know, to not pull up the stakes the way that they should.
Oh, Rhonda, are you with us? I can't hear him. Okay, well, I guess he's going to try to chime back in. You know, it's funny. This, you know, I'm going to, you know, I made my producer may get angry with me. I want to continue this conversation tomorrow.
Okay,
so we may have to reschedule something tomorrow because, you know, and I always say I learn, you know, I do these shows and I write my books and I do all of these things because it helps me learn as well.
Yes.
I never want to be held or perceived as I'm judging, and I'm not saying it directly against you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even just today, I keep hearing Obama is an elitist, Obama is an elitist. But I've been called that my whole life. But I'm just trying to do better. Why is being an elitist or somebody trying to do better a bad thing?
Well, it's not, and you know that. You absolutely know that's not the case. However, you know, my grandmother used to always have this expression, examine the source. You have to learn to let stuff, you know, fall off your back like a duck. You don't let it get intermingled in your emotions or your psyche because it's designed to destroy your psyche. That's number one. Number two, there's always going to be opposition to whatever is righteous. And that's more important than I think, number one. So you have to keep that up front. But the bottom line is you are on a mission, you have a destiny, and you are to fulfill it. And some people's destiny is to be, you know, a nudge in the side. So that's what you have to keep that all up front. But you must always do, beloved, what you were sent to do, regardless, because you will be held accountable now and in eternity, whether you believe it or not. You know, it is what it is.
Oh, no, you know I believe that. You know, you're talking to the right person on the right show at the right time at the right place. I tell all my young people, there's a scripture in the Bible, and of course I can't remember it right now, but it says, it's Ecclesiastes 11:9. Go sigh, I remembered it. It says, children, have fun while you are young, but remember in the end you will be judged.
Mm.
And there's another scripture that I share with my young people. It's Malachi, I believe it's 3:14-17. And it's questioning, why do I have to do good when it seems like all bad people are getting blessed? And it says that God keeps a scroll of remembrance, and he will remember on the day of judgment who did what. He keeps a scroll of remembrance. So I definitely hold those two scriptures near and dear to me. But I just look at it as just this whole concept of being black in America. And then I'm looking at it through another perspective because I grew up with a white stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
So now you add that into the mix, it really, really changes the dynamic of things because on the weekends, I would go stay with my black dad and in a very working class black neighborhood. And then during the week, I lived with my mom and my white stepfather in a quote unquote elitist environment. I really didn't know what black was supposed to look like. So how do young people know right now? Young black people identify what black is supposed to look like because that's all they see on MTV and BET.
Right.
Like that's okay. That's hood. That's what it is. That's what's up. That's what black is supposed to look like. Not understanding, and Joseph C. Phillips, who played on The Cosby Show, he's a Republican, and he makes it very clear that he's a Republican, but is he not black enough?
Well,
I can't call myself a Republican because I'm not siding with John McCain or George Bush, but what's wrong with being articulate, putting the ing at the end of your sentences, and pulling your pants up? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, again, I saw the gentleman, the actor that you are referring to, and I am as well a registered Republican. However, my vote
you're still welcome to the show.
My vote is primarily Well, thank you. My vote is primarily aligned with what righteousness says. And people have to remember something. You can vote for any president that you, anyone for president that you choose, but Congress is the one who calls the shots. So you got to remember
right.
that, okay?
Yeah, you're a puppet.
Now, the only thing that your president can do is hopefully persuade Congress and, you know, on behalf of you as best as possible. And that's why I say to people, you know, Bush, as an example, was Republican, and Congress is all Democrat. So what's your issue? It's not a Bush thing. But outside of that, I saw the gentleman, the actor that you were referring to, and what I pulled away from him was, unfortunately, his disdain for his own people. It's very easy for us to say – I mean, I was so – he's the reason that I stopped watching it in general, the couple – I'd say about an hour that I caught it. And I said, you know, beloved, well, we used to have an expression which, you know, goes back from a long time ago. I would call that a house nigger. I mean, his attitude was completely – unbearable, and I just kept thinking, who do you think you are? Do you not, you know, realize that, guess what, boo, when it's at the end of the day, you are black too.
Yep.
And that there are all sorts of people that have all sorts of experiences. And I'm glad that you didn't have to experience some of the bad things or you pulled yourself up. That's wonderful. But under no circumstances should any human being point their finger at another human being and say that they are the blame for their own issues or their own problems. Because you know what? That's not total reality. We have responsibility to do because of our problems. But if someone else is inflicting you, you know, with a needle in your arm, it's going to hurt after a while. And
yeah,
you're going to see the effect of that.
Yeah, you there, Aronde? Oh, no. Oh, well. You there, my buddy? Buddy, are you with us?
I did not mean to hog your
No, I want you to come back, and I want you to talk with me tomorrow. You know, I'm just like kind of, you know, because this is so needed. You know what's so funny? I got the little voice in my ear on June 26th to do this, and people that listen to my show every day have heard me say this before. I didn't know jack squat about doing a radio show. I come from marketing, entertainment. I know what I want a show to sound like, and I know what I want to hear. So I think that's what makes me a better hostess,
okay.
I guess. But I'm frustrated, and I'm angry because here I am, 37 years old, and I can't really – everything that my parents taught me is now debatable.
Mm.
90% of what they taught me is debatable and up for discussion. They taught me go to college, get a good job, wait until you have children, get a house, go on vacation, and all of that now is debatable. People with master's degrees cannot find a job.
Mm-hmm.
People are losing their houses, yet both husband and wife work.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm stuck, you know, trying to follow what my parents have taught me. But it's, I don't want to say irrelevant because that's not quite the case. But a lot of things that my parents taught me no longer hold true. And I remember my grandmother was angry with me for not buying my children Easter clothes. And I couldn't fathom going out to spend money on clothes that my children may not necessarily need just because the calendar says Easter.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 50 million, well, y'all know I make up words, 50 gajillion things that I'm confused about. So I'm really hoping, and it is my sincere and honest prayer, that the whole, and that's why the name of my show is called Life Remix, because we have to rethink everything. We have to rethink church. I was, and I wrote in my book, From Hip Hop to Heaven, I was afraid to get out of bed because I thought God was up there in the sky somewhere, and the minute I had an infraction, he was going to get pissed off and send me to hell. And I wrote that in the book, so that's why I'm saying it that way. Like, that's so not true. Never once was I told God lives in me and God is about love. I was told sit still in church, don't fidget with the candy wrapper, stand up and say the Decalogue, go up and sing in the choir. And I know they taught me the best with what they knew.
Right.
But now you wonder why this whole generation is walking around lost. We don't know what to do, and we can't ask you. My 14-year-old is teaching me about Twitter, and my father knows less than I do.
Well, that part, the technology part, all the young people are designed to do that, teach the older ones. Believe me on that one.
Hey, Aronde, are you there?
Yes, there's a generation. I think there's a big generation gap now in terms of
young people who have access to more information and the
ways of really controlling the world that all of us live.
And so it's making that divide between mom and dad
and their kids
a lot wider.
Now, what needs to happen, and I'm not an expert on anything, but it's just understanding yourself. The same thing your guest said, the same thing you said, you came to an understanding.
Can you turn off your echo? Can you hit mute on your computer?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, my God, much better. Y'all, this is nothing but God helping us get through this show.
Okay, no, but there's a divide. There's a divide between the young and the old, and it's going to get worse because of the technology. You're not going to understand what's going to – I'm sorry, Ms. Brown, but you're not going to understand what's going to go on 2-3 years from now. Your son will. And so there's that divide. What's going to help us is to start focusing on the self, start focusing on improving you as a human being. The same fears that you had, my first ambition in life was to preach in the Anglican Church. I was told not to look at the sky because I would see the face of God and surely die.
Mm.
Now,
wow.
I'm a spiritual man. I am a spiritual man. And I heard Ashley Judd talking a couple of days ago, and she said something profound to me. Religion is for people who fear hell. James Baldwin said the same thing. I love James Baldwin. Spirituality is for people who've been there. I've been there. I haven't gone to the depths of the kids on CNN special who had to go to jail or use drugs, but I've been in situations where my family life was not stable. Everybody goes through that, and a lot of people don't get out. What I'm saying is I got out. How did I do it? I focused on the things that were positive about me. Just like your caller said, I built a community around myself. I was on teams all my life, sports teams, so I had a built-in family there who all were focused on the same goal, winning. My teachers at school, they encouraged me. They said, you're good, and I pursued that. You don't get to college if people don't think you're smart, and you don't think you can do it.
Yeah, but you're lucky.
So,
I have to interject.
I'm not lucky. I'm no different from any person who has those opportunities.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are, because you said you had teachers that encouraged you. A lot of these teachers in these urban schools tell these kids time and time again, just as they told my children, you're not college material, not blatantly, but in a very indirect way. Well, perhaps you should explore trade school. No, you're directing them out of college, and that's why I'm saying you're lucky, because a lot of these young people in these urban schools, the teachers are not saying, honey, here's to take your SATs. Do you know my son, and I can only speak for me, did not take his SATs. I have been pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. That's all he knew. But when he got into high school and he's chilling and all of these other things and the teachers are not pushing it and the guidance counselors are not pushing it, as a result, it has limited his college options because now he's like, well, I should have took the SATs. I tried to tell you, but because it was not reinforced, because he was in an urban school, this is the result. So you are lucky that you had people to help you.
I mean, but it also was my parents around me. My mom, she was a teacher, so there was a primacy and a value in education. I think it goes back, if you value education, it's no coincidence that the people who end up in college and doing well have parents who did that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it has to start in the house. If like I said, I fear when I went to my son's kindergarten meet and greet that there wouldn't be other black kids in his class, but I'm an intelligent human being. I'm college educated, so is my wife. We can do that at home. When you go to school, it's just that CNN 2 hours is just the window. School is just the window. Learning happens, at least for me, learning happened outside. I was a smart kid. So school was easy. The learning about life happened. And I hate to say, but I disagree with you that there are people who are just – no, I'm not – if you hear my story, it wasn't luck. There was a lot of hard work that went into getting up from where I came from, and it's possible. It is possible for anybody, especially here. And that's,
well, maybe
that,
I'm
that's,
very cynical.
That's
maybe
that.
Maybe I'm extremely cynical because I know
– Oh,
for
you're a
fact.
Wonderful, wonderful human being. You know that.
Well, yeah, but I still say I'm cynical because I have so little hope in our future, and I say it – very, very honestly, because I look at these young kids. I'm in youth ministry. Yes, there are promising young people, and yes, you know, things can go well, but I also am pragmatic, and I see, like, these kids have no direction, no hope, and here I am preaching at the top of my lungs, you guys can do it, I'm your cheerleader, rock on with your bad selves, and they're, like, sending text messages in church. That's the thing,
I think, and I hate to cut you off, but I think a lot of people are coming at this generation, just like you said, with a message and a means from an older generation, not to call you old or anything, But just there's a different way of interacting with kids today. They have access to the information. They don't want to have somebody talking to them. They want to have somebody helping
that far
show
removed.
Them.
But I'm not that far removed. We're down to the last 90 seconds of the show, and we're going to carry this show. We're going to definitely pick this up for tomorrow. Anything that was scheduled for tomorrow is getting bumped until next week. We're going to carry this over to tomorrow. Because I am not that far removed. Do you see what I'm saying? I can't accept the fact that I'm so old, and I'm not saying that you said that, that there's so much of a disconnect between my son and I. There is not. There's a huge disconnect between my dad and I, and there's an even bigger disconnect between my father and my son. But at what point, you know what, I hate you. Oh, I just got the little signal. We have to end the show. We're down to like the last 30-something seconds. Everybody, you're listening to Oronde Ash, and then we have Ms. V. We are picking this conversation up tomorrow. I promise you, at 12 noon tomorrow, you can tune back in. Before we go, I must say our closing prayer. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is. And wherever you are, God is. And may the words of our mouth and the meditation of our hearts always be acceptable in his sight. Everybody, I love you and thank you all for listening. And please tune back in tomorrow because we're picking this up tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Have a good one.